On a bitter, cold night, a family home went up in flames, killing one man and leaving a second person injured. A witness blamed a kerosene heater. Local investigators suspected arson. Forensic science was needed to sort through the contradictions. Was this an accident or cold-blooded murder? The weather in Jackson, Georgia, is usually warm most of the year. But in January of 2003, there was an unusual cold snap with temperatures below freezing. Citrus growers used kerosene heaters to save their orange crop. And Gene and Jim Long used a kerosene heater in the workshop of their home so the pipes wouldn't freeze. But something went terribly wrong. When firemen arrived, the house was totally ablaze. Jean Long had escaped the fire, but her husband Jim was trapped inside.
My father-in-law came to the door to wake us. He said that... He said there's a fire at your dad's house and it's bad.
It was engulfed in flames. Very shocking moment.
Firemen searched the area around the home, but there was no sign that Jim had escaped.
I just thought my dad would come walking out, but no.
The Longs' home was attached to a workshop Jim used to store the equipment for his tree trimming business. It, too, was on fire. After the fire was put out, the firefighters cut through the metal siding. They found the body of 53-year-old Jim Long.
Almost like disbelief that was going on at that time. Just real hard to, almost like it was a dream that you wanted to wake up from.
Jean was taken to the hospital where she was treated for minor scrapes and bruises. One of the bruises was on her chin. She told police that her husband tried to fill their kerosene heater with fuel, and then there was an explosion.
He was covered in flames. She tried to put the fire out with her hands. Her gloves caught fire.
In a panic, Jean said she ran from the workshop into their home to call the fire department. At the fire scene, investigators found the remnants of the kerosene heater. But the plastic fuel can was found outside the workshop door, in perfect condition, inconsistent with Gene's story. And Major Mike Overby believed that the position of Jim's body was inconsistent with most fire victims.
And it appeared that his legs were outstretched and his arms were above his head. It appeared to me the way someone would be positioned if they had been dragged into a particular spot or carried. That was the first thing that I noticed, that they were not in a fetal-type position that you see in fires.
In addition, Overby found visual evidence of pore patterns around Jim's body, the type of patterns which result from the use of an accelerant.
That to him suggested that James Long had been lying on the floor and gasoline or an accelerant had been poured over him intentionally, and he had been set afire.
And Jim's autopsy revealed even more evidence that he was unconscious before the fire started. During Jim Long's autopsy, The medical examiner found something suspicious. There wasn't as much dirt, soot, and smoke damage in his lungs as one would expect in a fire victim.
Mr. Long did not have enough of the chemicals that are found in the blood after a person dies of smoke inhalation for that to have caused his death. He had breathed some smoke. He had soot in his throat, but he had not breathed enough smoke to kill him.
And Jim also suffered a fractured skull. Dr. Bill Bass, a world-famous forensic anthropologist at the University of Tennessee, was asked for his opinion.
We have three fractures irradiating out from the same source, the source being the hole that is in the skull. That is an indication that there's been blunt force trauma there and is not due to the fire.
The cause of death was determined to be thermal injuries and blunt force head trauma. His death was listed as a homicide.
So you're behind me.
Homicide investigator Major Michael Overby asked Gene Long to explain what happened on the night of the fire. Gene said her husband was filling the heater with kerosene when it exploded.
You said that he relit it inside.
Well, he didn't relight it. He was refueling it. He was putting fuel in it.
With what?
Kerosene.
With what container?
It was red.
Yet the red plastic fuel can was found outside the workshop.
All right, how did it get back outside?
I don't know.
And Overby noticed that Jim's arms and legs were outstretched when he was found. Underneath Jim's body were several aerosol cans.
There was one under his head, there was one under his right leg, and another one up under his back. And that appeared odd. That appeared, to me, something that could be used to accelerate the damage of the body in a fire.
Patterns on the concrete floor around the body were also suspicious.
These are called pore patterns, right here. Absolutely nothing else on the planet makes these marks. Nothing. This is what it leaves, especially in concrete, when an accelerant such as gasoline is poured on something. You know what I mean?
Jean also said she called the fire department from a phone in the house, but investigators found the outside door was locked. If Jean locked it on her way out, police saw this as evidence that she was in no hurry to save her husband.
Her husband is on fire, burning in this building. She runs outside, but she locks the door behind her. See, to me, that's very important.
You think the jury's gonna buy this? I can tell you right now, they won't.
Major Overby asked Jean to take a polygraph test, and she agreed.
She was asked point blank if she poured her husband with gasoline, set him on fire. She failed that question. She failed if she was present when he was murdered.
Investigators discovered that Jim was angry with his wife for spending so much time in Kansas each year visiting relatives. There were also rumors that Jim may have been planning to leave Gene. Major Overby believes on the night of the fire, the couple may have been discussing a divorce, which prompted an argument.
It's our theory that there was a domestic situation between Mr. Long and his wife. I believe that the abrasion on her chin came from him possibly slapping her. And his skull fractures, I believe, was a result of her striking him in the head with some hard object.
Overby believes Jean poured an accelerant on Jim, set him on fire, then inadvertently carried the fuel can out of the workshop when she left to call for help.
I felt like it was a strong circumstantial case. Felt like we had eliminated any other reasonable hypothesis for this death.
The day after her husband's funeral, Jean Long was charged with arson and murder.
She didn't seem shocked. She made no statement at the time. She acted like she was expecting it.
Jean told her lawyers there was an explosion in that workshop and that there must be evidence in the ashes to prove it. Jean Long's family hired defense attorneys Wade Crumbly and Barbara Moon for what they feared would be a long, difficult trial. Barbara Moon met with Jean in the county jail.
She was a very broken woman, started just twiddling her hands and shaking unbelievably. I thought she was very genuine, and I believed in her. It's just that simple.
A week later, Jean's church managed to raise the money for her bail. Jean's family insisted that her marriage to Jim was a happy one. Jim's daughter from a previous marriage agreed.
I was glad he met somebody and that he was happy and that he wasn't going to be alone.
Every time you seen Jim, you seen Jean. Same one, you seen both of them. They went everywhere together.
And Jean had no financial motive. Jim's life insurance amounted to less than $40,000. But local prosecutors were convinced this was an open and shut case.
Their theory was she saw the opportunity to get rid of him and poured him and lit it and then made it seem or tried to tell everyone that it was an accident.
The defense asked John Lentini, a nationally known fire investigator, for his opinion.
With respect to the quality of the fire investigation, it ranks up there with the worst that I have ever seen. And I have seen a lot of bad fire investigations in my day. This was over the top.
Local investigators suspected accelerants had been used to start the fire. But Lentini discovered that the workshop housed containers of fuel for Jim's tree trimming equipment.
In this shop, we had vehicles and we had tanks of acetylene, we had tanks of propane, we had containers of liquid fuels.
He had chainsaws in there, lots of papers, clothing, lots of combustibles. And when it went up, it just really went up.
And Lentini disputed police claims that there were pore patterns around Jim's body. He said the heat of the fire made such a determination impossible.
Once you get to full room involvement, you're going to get all kinds of patterns that are easily misinterpreted. It happens all the time. I've created them by mistake. I've created them on purpose.
The homicide investigator thought that the position of Jim's body was suspicious.
We felt like, from the very beginning, based on the way he was laying on his back with his arms stretched over his head and his legs straight out, that he had been placed there.
But Jean had always contended that while her husband was on fire, he was flailing about. Was it possible that Jim struck his head on the metal table nearby, causing the fractured skull and knocking him unconscious?
I can tell you that there is a blow to the side of the head that caused fractures. Now, who did that blow or how that blow got there, I can't tell you. Could he have fallen on the metal workbench? Yes, he could have.
Lentini believes the charge of arson and murder had been a rush to judgment and that the kerosene heater was to blame.
Basically, what you do is you fill this up with kerosene or diesel fuel. You throw a wick of some kind down in there. What happens when you have this lake of fire down in here is you're generating lots and lots of soot. And that soot coats the inside, and itself will catch on fire like charcoal. So if you don't allow this thing to cool down sufficiently, that's pretty dangerous.
In a surprising discovery, gas chromatography of the residue inside the heater's fuel tank identified gasoline and not kerosene. It takes more heat to ignite kerosene. Gasoline ignites at very low temperatures.
The difference in flammability between gasoline and kerosene is just tremendous. And I've worked on a lot of fires where people misfuel kerosene heaters with gasoline and end up having big fires.
Gene said they were using the heater outside before they moved it indoors. Since a gallon of gasoline is equivalent to 20 sticks of dynamite, when Jim poured it into the hot fuel tank, it caused an explosion, just as Gene described.
The residue of gasoline inside that smudge pot was the physical evidence, and Mrs. Long's story was the eyewitness evidence. It fits together, and she couldn't have faked that part.
The fuel canister found outside the workshop, which investigators found so suspicious, contained kerosene, proving it played no role in the fire. Prosecutors still believe Jean Long murdered her husband. But which version would the jury believe? When Jean Long went on trial for her husband's murder, prosecutors showed jurors the videotape of Jean's interrogation in which she contradicted herself.
And then he fell down in this blower. But that's what you told me, Miss Jean. I'm trying to put together what you said and try to make it make sense, and it don't.
It doesn't make sense to me.
No, it doesn't. So how can you expect it to make sense to me?
But the defense attorneys used the same tape to show something else. Major Overby employed a standard police technique when he ended the interrogation and left the room with the tape machine still running. In this situation, a suspect will often say something incriminating. In this case, she said something else.
What Major Overby had hoped had happened, I think, worked against him. I think he was in hopes that she was going to say something to hurt her, incriminate herself. And what she did, she reached out to God and started begging for help to give her the strength to endure that hostile interview.
The defense claimed that the fire was accidental, that Jim Long mistakenly filled the hot kerosene heater with gasoline, causing the explosion. Jean frantically tried to put it out, and when she couldn't, she ran to call for help. At some point, Jim struck his head on the workbench, which fractured his skull and caused his death. The defense offered no explanation for why Jean locked the door on her way out of the house, except that it was force of habit, something she did every time she left the house. Jean Long herself took the stand in her own defense.
She came across as completely genuine, terrified about the prospect of what she was going through, and terrified at reliving the moment of what happened that night.
The jury didn't hear about the results of the polygraph test.
Polygraph examinations are inadmissible. They're inadmissible for a reason. They're not reliable, bottom line.
Jean's family says the medication she was taking may have been a contributing factor.
She was just really drugged up, more or less. She was on the pills the hospital had given her to help her stay calm and to kind of take in everything.
After 8 days of testimony, the jury deliberated for just 3 hours before rendering their verdict. They found Jean Long not guilty of all charges.
This case never should have been brought. They should have consulted an expert.
My training is in violent crime interpretation and crime scene interpretation and reconstruction.
To this day, Major Overby doesn't agree with the verdict or with John Lentini's conclusions about the fire.
I believe 100% today, as I did during the trial that she killed her husband. I believe that she got by with murder. The unanswered question to me would be why the jury decided what they decided.
After the trial and the not guilty verdict, Jean Long moved out of the state and is trying to put her life back together again.
She's still grieving. She's finally being able to not concentrate on the trial and stuff and being able to work through her emotions.
The remnants of Jim and Jean Long's house and workshop are still standing. A reminder that forensic science isn't only a tool to convict the guilty, but to protect the innocent as well.
If I could keep this from happening to another family, and so other people wouldn't have to go through what we went through.
What we need in our system of justice is for the state to have proof that it really is a set fire. And they didn't have that here.
It wasn't a case of charging the wrong person with a crime. There was no crime at all. It was an accident.